everybody, and welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. This week, we are talking about Dead Heat, a movie that I'm sure you think I picked, but actually it was Scott, shockingly enough. So, Scott, tell us, why did you pick what is such like a Matt or Brian Kelly type pick with Dead Heat?
Well, I wanted to do you guys a favor. I wanted to be nice for once and pick something that you would enjoy.
So your Christmas gift to us was picking Dead Heat.
Still a bit sadistic, yes.
Brian, we were talking a little bit while waiting for Scott to jump on, and you were a fan of this.
I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I knew you would.
And Scott is all about seasonal movies, and sometimes he even subconsciously picks seasonal movies. So the fact that we were doing Dead Heat around Christmas time, when it has the father from A Story About Christmas, known as The Christmas Story, is just on par for Horror Movie Night. We're just not posers. That's the thing. You're like, oh, they dropped the ball on Friday the 13th. Us releasing an episode on Friday the 13th about Friday the 13th is like potheads smoking on 420. True ones don't care. It's just another day. It's just another day. This is the deep cuts we do for you guys. So you're welcome.
Yeah, I mean, so my memories of Deep Heat is this is the second time I've ever watched
Deep
it.
Heat.
Deep Heat.
Wow, Matt.
Jesus.
Matt,
that's
this
the porn
is not
version.
Bad. Yeah.
Oh, no, I watched the wrong movie.
Matt got that confused with his other podcast, One Clip Thunder, which you can find on Spotify.
It might have been a One Clip Blunder, though.
Oh, shit. I watched this on FearNet. It was one of the FearNet on-demand movies when I first discovered FearNet. I think it was like the second movie I ever watched. Watched on there. It was fine back then, and then when Scott picked it, it was like, well, good excuse as any to buy the DVD, so I bought the DVD.
Why? You could have just watched it on Shudder.
I know, but
That's where I watched it. Brian, is that where you watched it, dude?
Yeah, I watched it on Shudder. I was very pissed off before I watched it, I'm not gonna lie. I was so pleasantly surprised. This looked like a Nothing But Trouble or like that Jeff Goldblum like comedy. Like, that's what I thought I was getting into based on the cover.
So I'm gonna tell you guys that I pre-screened this one surprise. So I don't remember exactly when Dead Heat, this was my first watch. Well, this is my
first complete watch.
First, yes, thank you. It hit my radar sometime within the last calendar year, maybe like January or February before lockdown, and I put it on my long list. And then Shudder got it during the summer, I want to say, and I watched the first 7 or 8 minutes, and then you see the biker with a troll head from Ernest Scared Stupid, and I thought, this is absolutely Horror Movie Night material, and I turned it off. And I put it on the list, and then I watched it for this, and boy, was I happy about that denouement of Vincent Price.
Oh, yeah.
So my thing with this movie, the reason why it was on my, like, long list of, like, oh, I would own that and rewatch it. But then, like, a decade had passed since I had seen it. I'm like, do I want to own that? And then Scott picked it, and I was like, well, something's sending me a sign. So I bought the DVD, and as soon as I hit play, that new line, that the New World logo comes on, and I am, like, immediately taken back to, like, this is, like, one of those movies. I've said this before about a couple movies that we've watched, but, like, this makes me nostalgic for a viewing experience I didn't actually have. Like,
yeah.
You, like, watch it, and you're like, I know I didn't watch this in my basement when I was 14, but I certainly feel like I watched this in my basement when I was 14. Like, it just has that tone.
What did we record last week? No, Spookies. And you were saying, and you've said it a few times about movies. You said, like, Spookies is, like, a movie that, like, you and your friends put on and mock. And, Matt, that's not true. That's why people stop coming over. But this movie, this movie and Black Roses, like, these are, yo, put this on with a group of friends. Because it's ridiculous, but it's also fun. It's not bad. It's just, it's a fun time. It's got a little bit of action, very minimal horror. It's not
Dude, there's
horror,
a fuckload of action in this. Like, there are so many gunshots and so many car chases. And that's how everybody would be like, Scott picked this?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, the first, like, 10 minutes feels like it's a trauma movie to me.
Like, oh, for sure.
Like, everything about it, between, like, the chase scene, the explosions, but it's all, like, definitely not on the biggest budget. So, like, it has a very, like, trauma or canon films feel to it. But I think that that's like the charm when we talk about these movies. And I was just listening to someone talk about this when they were trying to, they were discussing like comparing Jaws to Sharknado, essentially. And it's like, you know, or comparing like a Troll 2 to Sharknado, where the big thing is like, there is a difference between sincerity in throwing everything against the wall and like just fucking purposely being bad. As insane as this entire movie is, there is no doubt in my mind that they were hoping that this could maybe become a franchise one day. Like, it really feels like they're like, all right, come on. Like, we've had Lethal Weapon. We've had Die Hard. We need to make the horror Die Hard. How do we make the horror Die Hard? And when I was doing research, apparently the owner of New World approached the writer and asked him about writing a Dead Heat sequel. And the writer was like, but we killed everybody. And he goes, you have a regeneration machine.
They destroyed it.
The 80s.
They destroyed it.
There's a way. There's a way to make a sequel to this. We're never going to get it because this movie did not really blow anybody's socks off. And I feel like the film is fun for a while. But then the third act is just like, doors thrown open, we're here. Like, the third act in this is so fucking good.
Can we talk about how ballsy it was to kill a main character off camera?
Yes!
That was such a ballsy move.
What a horrible death. Like, hung upside down into a fish tank.
I didn't think it was Doug until they said it, because I'm like, no, they would have showed it. Right? Because he's the movie's about him.
Well, and like the funniest thing was like I put in the movie and I see the name Vincent Price in the opening credits and I'm like, oh, I forgot that Vincent Price was in this movie. And then 30 minutes later, Vincent Price shows up at the movie and I thought, oh, I forgot that Vincent Price was in this movie.
Dude, and I don't even, I fast forward through opening credits constantly. And so it was a complete surprise to me that he showed up and I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, me too. I was like, hey, Vincent. Here,
like we're friends.
Until he showed up in the third act as like the big bad, I was fully convinced that they just sent a camera guy to Vincent Price's house and filmed him in his bed for like 15 minutes and called it a day. Like I was like, that makes sense for this movie. Like they just were like, hey, we can get Vincent Price. He doesn't want to leave his bed. So he's just going to be on a videotape that they
Vincent
watch.
Price is a,
telling you right now. If there's ever an acting career of my life, that is my contract. Always.
You want that Brando contract where Brando's like, I'm going to show up on set in just a moo-moo and you have to deal with it. And they're like, okay.
But I just want to do like a remake of Casablanca, but it just cuts from like this high production value directly to me in my bedroom. Yeah. If you don't get on that plane, you're going to regret it. Maybe not today. Maybe not tomorrow. See, I got it. Call me.
Oh, shit. But yeah, let me see. I don't have a ton of notes because I just kept getting sucked into the movie. Mm-hmm. But it's a very, very fun film. The part in this movie where I was watching it, I was like, okay, this is fun. This is enjoyable. It's like nothing too crazy. But it's full of action. I got it. It's like a zombie movie, whatever. It's a zombie cop movie. Then there's the scene where they are being attacked by reanimated chickens and ducks and pigs. And I was like, this movie is amazing.
Liver to the face is what I wrote down from that spot. Like, oh my God, that part is just absolute magic. Worth the price of admission. And the price of admission was $0 for me because I have it on Shudder. But God damn, it was so fucking great. And it just felt so 80s. Like, I don't know why, but this concept of a Chinese butchery with these ducks like hanging from the ceiling. I think it has something to do with watching A Christmas Story because, you know, they go and they have duck on Christmas Day. And I, in my life, have probably never tasted duck. That's fine. I will never taste duck. But it definitely wasn't a part of my childhood is what I'm getting at. And watching A Christmas Story as a child is the only experience I have with the idea of a bird with its head still attached when it's dead. That is probably why that Chinese butcher scene feels so nostalgic to me, because I'm like, yeah, there we go. It's like exactly the 80s.
It's kind of funny that like this is 1988 And in what, like 2010, Troma did almost the same thing with Poltergeist, and the special effects haven't changed one iota between those two movies. Like,
that's saying a lot less about Troma.
I know.
You know?
I'm so curious to see, not to get off topic, but Sergeant Kabuki Man was on a podcast I was listening to, and they were talking about Shakespeare Shitstorm, and apparently, like, fucking next level production value.
Yeah, apparently, like, Lloyd has been working on that movie for like 4 years, which is kind of par for the course for him. But like, he really, I mean, it's so funny that Lloyd would be making what he's hoping to be his most accessible mainstream movie, and he calls it Shakespeare Shitstorm.
He just doesn't get it. He doesn't get it. We love him.
And the thing about Lloyd is that he's so close to stardom, and he's still probably eating ramen.
Yeah.
You know, like,
here's the flip side. He's so close to stardom, and he's probably eating ramen, but it's also probably him going, man, I could really go for some ramen today. Like, because
he is the Hitch of movie makers. Like, yeah. he can get you a career. But I feel like there are so many people on food stamps that work for Troma too. Like, we only know the successful ones. There's so many people on Troma that just like are living in a house with six other people just trying to pay rent.
Well, and but the flip side of that is like, that's most of people's LA experience. Like, I kind of lucked out with the place that I stayed at, even though it was a shithole, that it was like a 2-bedroom house being split by two people.
Yeah.
But like, right down the street was one of like the few friends that I had, and he was living with 10 other guys in a single room condo where they all just
10?
Yeah, so literally sharing a mattress like hamsters, because that way their rent was only like $100 a month, and they could like not have to work a regular job to go audition whenever they needed to audition. So like, that's some people's LA experiences. I'm glad that it wasn't mine, but mine was also nothing to write home about. So that was also the group where the guy got really excited to get a couch off of the street to put into the house, and then it was infested with bed bugs, and then they had to,
oh my god,
live in separate people's houses.
LA
for a couple
sounds
days.
Like a fucking horrible. It sounds like feudal Europe.
Yeah, I mean, that's also people making that choice. Like, no one was like, you have to live in a house with 10 people. They decided to live in a house with 10 people. But there was also people that, like, you know, didn't move to LA to be an actor and just, like, moved there to work for, like, Hulu or Netflix in their tech department. They had, like, a beautiful apartment all to themselves. So it's like, you make your choices when
so
you're living
weird
in LA.
That whole lifestyle is so weird to me. I'm actually blown away that there's so few Dave Chappelle's. Like, you would think there'd be so much more celebrities like Dave Chappelle, but there isn't. Like, Dave Chappelle lives in a very, very small suburb in Ohio. Like, he wants to live in a town where like everyone know. He's not like Dave Chappelle the celebrity. He's just another neighbor. The population is like 300 people.
Well, that's like Wanda Sykes where we live, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like Wanda Sykes lives like 5 minutes from me.
I mean, if I saw Rachel Brosnahan out, if we're talking, you know, like megastars that are also comedians. I mean, she's also a comedian on a TV show, so it's not like she's a real comedian, but you know, if I saw Rachel Brosnahan, I would not be chill. I'd be like, please, you know, let me leave my wife for you. Megan knows, don't worry.
I don't know how we got on this weird tangent. Oh, because we were talking about the weirdness of like celebrity
Roma? And people living in LA.
Yeah, to bounce with what you said, Brian, even with like the suburb stuff, is I always go to the John Waters quote, which I think is like the best quote of on that topic, which is that someone asked him why he chooses to still live in the suburbs of Baltimore when he absolutely has become famous enough to live in like have a nice house in Los Angeles or in New York. And his answer was that when you go to the city, it's a bunch of normal people trying to act like they're weird. But in the suburbs, it's a bunch of weird people who think that it's normal, and that's way better for my writing.
Like, yeah. Yeah, there's nothing that appeases me about any city, let alone, like, Los Angeles.
All right, so back to Dead Heat. So eventually we do get to the third act. Now Doug is also dead, so we've got our zombie hero. And then we get a full fucking body meltdown from the girl that you think is on their side, and then she reveals that she's been sort of a traitor this whole time, and she's just like, I'm sorry, and she like melts. It's like a little puppet skull, like, bye, and it's so fucking good.
Bye. It's amazing. Like,
but then, yeah, he goes, he tracks down, Vincent Price is still alive. It's actually, he got out of bed and showed up to set for a day or two, and it's just some good-ass shit. Like, it's such a good... The big thing with this movie that I think is the deciding factor, and I will preface this by saying that I hate when people bitch about this particular topic, but the big thing that makes this movie work is that they went all in on the R rating, because there is a very easy way that this could have been a PG-13 movie to like reach a wider audience, and I think that it would have lost a lot of its charm because of how over the top the sequences are. But I do want to clarify that I am also not one of those people that thinks that, like, oh, if it's a PG-13 horror movie, it can't be good, because there are a shit ton of PG and PG-13 horror movies that say otherwise.
Yeah, but sometimes I wish that they weren't. Like, I still have beef with Krampus for going the PG-13 route.
Dude, yeah, we'll don't even fucking just save that. Oh, put a pin in that shit.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes there are PG-13 movies that you definitely wish were R-rated movies. But, like, there's also, like, I think The Final Girls is perfectly fine as it is as a PG-13 movie. Scott talked about earlier with Gretel and Hansel. I mean, that was a perfectly fine PG-13 movie that could have been a PG movie, and it was still an effective horror film.
And I don't think that it needed more gore. It was pretty gruesome it was gross without being R-rated gross, you know? Like, I just thought that, like, I thought it was really effective. And, you know, in another world where, you know, we didn't have a fucking crazy 2020, I feel like that could have had some legs, you know? Like, yeah. It got thrown in at the worst fucking time of year. That and Underwater, like, they just got sacrificed.
Well,
and
that's what's,
you know,
making me nervous. They got tossed in the January-February area that is always known as, like, the dumping ground for movies. It's, mm-hmm. like, the movies that studios have no faith in. So the fact that, like, Scream 5 is coming out, like, January 14th
it's
is,
Scream.
Like, sorry, Scream is coming out.
It's going to suck, dude. It's going to fucking
suck. Why? You're dropping it in January. That's already giving me really bad vibes on
dude,
all of it.
Dude, it's just a fucking soft reboot. It's going to suck. Yeah. I mean, I will gladly eat my words, but there's no way that you can top Scream 4.
I'm going to go see it. You ain't stopping me from seeing that in the theaters. But
are you going to go see it in the theaters?
Yeah, for 2022. I think it's going to be safe.
Oh, 2022. I thought it was 2021.
No, better be safe at that point.
Yeah. If it ain't safe to see a movie by January 2022, you're going to have to cut me down from the fucking fan above
rafters.
My bed. But,
oh, my God.
But yeah, so Dead Heat, good shit. Good shit. Great pick, Scott.
Thanks. And then we get a body explosion at the end, just so you know.
Yeah, there's a big explosion in the regeneration machine, which, here's my sequel pitch. The regeneration machine has the ability to regenerate itself. Boom.
Genius.
Now we're into the sequels.
Okay, who's going to finance this?
Probably Troma. They'll give us $10 and a sandwich.
There's no sandwiches involved when the Troma's involved.
No, it's a sandwich, but it's literally just a slice of cheese between two slices of Wonder Bread. Brian's read
no
the book.
Mayo?
No
Dude,
mayo.
Do you know how expensive mayonnaise is?
I know, but I could eat a cheese and mayo sandwich is all I'm saying.
Dude, we've all eaten a lot of cheese and mayo sandwiches in our time.
Look, we've all had a ketchup sandwich in our lives.
Matt's had one this week.
My Aunt Lisa defended me when my whole family looked at me like a fucking psychopath. Because I was on a kick. I tried to make my own lunches at like 6 years old, 7 years old. And I was like, you know what? I like cheese and ketchup sandwiches. And my father, being the loving father he is, says, you're disgusting. And I'll never forget. My Aunt Lisa says, well, it's like a cheeseburger just without the burger.
Very sweet. Thanks, Aunt Lisa.
And listen, flip side of that is Dad has no business telling anybody that how they do things is disgusting, because we're talking about a man who didn't want to have to clean a pan, so started making grilled cheese sandwiches by putting two pieces of toast in a toaster and then buttering them with cheese and throwing it in the microwave for 30 seconds.
That is convenient. I will say we were raised as freaks. He raised us as...
Why is that the reaction?
But he did. We're fucking freaks to the rest of the world. So you don't need Delco. I think it's a Delco thing. But Matt, did you know that ketchup on eggs is repulsive?
Apparently, and I never knew that. I'm all about ketchup on eggs.
I don't know, man. Like, that doesn't seem that weird to me. I ate ketchup on eggs when I was a kid. I was much more of a salsa on eggs kind of guy, personally. Mm. But ketchup and salsa are basically, like, inbred cousins.
The biggest one that our family does that no one else on the planet does is butter our Pop-Tarts, which is, like...
Oh, that's not true at all, dude. Buttered Pop-Tarts was... the only way to eat Pop-Tarts in the 2000s.
Like, thank you for defending anything. Us. But there's a lot of Facebook polls and Instagram polls we've posted that say otherwise.
Oh, listen, fuck them. They don't know. They're probably also 12. But if you grew up in the 90s and the 2000s, if you didn't ever enjoy a buttered brown sugar, frosted brown sugar and cinnamon Pop-Tart straight out of the toaster, you haven't lived.
Yeah,
seriously.
Dude,
those things
for me,
are
it's strawberry. Strawberry buttered, perfection.
So I always thought the strawberry was a little too much. But
the strawberry was a prank that Matt fell for. They were just like, let's make the worst Pop-Tart. So they made strawberry, and they're like, you know what? I feel like we can make this worse. So then they came out with the non-frosted strawberry. I remember my mom brought that home. I was like, what the fuck is this? I'm 5 years old. Get me some fucking frosting or get out of my face, bitch.
Well, for me, the big one, I'm sure they're not as good as I think they are, but I fell right into the Wildberry trap. I was like, Wildberry
was not fire. Dude, when the Wildberry came out with the frosting, that had double thick frosting on it, and it was straight sugar.
Yeah.
The Wildberry was fine.
Okay.
Yeah,
cool.
That's good. The all non-frosted right. strawberry, you are a serial killer.
No, no. Non-frosted blueberry.
Oh, yeah. What are
that's
you doing?
The and I love blueberries.
Me too.
Blueberries are some of my favorite fruit. But fake blueberry is almost as bad as fake banana flavoring. And they obviously never made a fucking banana Pop-Tart, thank God.
But, unless they're listening right now and we just... set them off. They're like, ooh, how did we not do that one?
I am all for banana Pop-Tarts if they try to make it. I love banana flavored anything. Jade hates
you, okay,
it.
Okay, now we're back. We're back to you guys being fucking
don't include
of nature.
Me in his insanity. Banana flavored everything is terrible.
There's a new restaurant called Cinnaholic. It's a dessert restaurant that only makes like these like gourmet Cinnabons, and I got to create my own yesterday, and I did a banana cream frosting with sliced bananas and peanut butter cups on it, and it was delicious.
Anyway, Scott, double feature, go.
All right, so I'm doing a little bit of an unofficial double feature. You remember that episode in Ash vs. Evil Dead season 2 when he has to fight the corpses and like one of them's ass goes over his head? That's the episode that I want to pair with Dead Heat. Because he's fighting inanimate objects.
Nice.
All right, Brian, do you actually have one, or are you going to like mumble and try to...
I do. No, I do, actually. It's a stretch, but whatever. This is a zombie movie, so I'm going to pair with my favorite zombie movie that's also a horror comedy, which is Shaun of the Dead. And have a delightful night.
All right, and I was going to go with something that Brian mentioned offhand, but within the first 10 minutes, I was like, man, this reminds me of Sergeant Kabuki Man NYPD. So I would double feature this with Sergeant Kabuki Man, NYPD.
Nice.
Which is a movie that is funnier in concept than it actually is, but I do think it's one of the more accessible trauma films in the sense that they really were trying to make something that would hit and not be like an underground sensation, and it... You know, some people didn't love it because it felt like it wasn't what they wanted out of a trauma movie, but I do think it's a charming movie. It's just not, it feels like it almost goes as far as it needs to go, but never quite does.
I love when you say accessible trauma movies. It's so funny to me because they're barely there.
They're barely there, but like you've read his book and you've seen almost all those movies, and that one really does feel like they were trying. Like they were really trying to like make a movie that actually would play in theaters.
Yeah, poor guy.
Scott, what is something that you watched or did this week that you would like to promote?
I got two things.
All right.
One, I posted this on the HMN Facebook group like a month ago at this point, I want to say. But if you missed that or if you're not part of our Facebook group, I really want to give a shout out to Blood Vessel, which is a horror movie on Shudder. It's a Shudder exclusive, I want to say. And it's killing Nazis, you know, dead Nazis. One of my favorite things about 2020 is that we still get to watch Nazis get fucking murdered. And it's also got vampires, which, and it's a cool, it's a Strigoli, so it's a little bit of a different vampire lore. But I think it's a really effective low-budget movie. It doesn't feel like a super low-budget movie to me, which is nice because I always love movies that are scrappy like that, where they hide the lack of production value where they can. But yeah, if you haven't watched that, I highly recommend you give it a shot. And then I also wanted to say that I was on an episode of One Hit Thunder.
Yeah, he was.
We did Lit, My Own Worst Enemy. Ooh. And that was a great conversation. I gotta say, I really enjoyed talking to Chris about it, and also just kind of reminiscing about what it was like to be a quote-unquote punk kid, you know, back in the 90s in high school. I hope that Matt makes me sound not like an asshole on
it. I cut 10 minutes out, so you're welcome.
Dude, we only talked for 35.
No, you talked for 45. I cut it to 35.
All right. Well, then you probably got all the good stuff.
And I'm going to use that to bounce off, because shortly the day after we recorded that episode, I then helped with the movie premiere live stream of the Punchline Music Special, which is now free if you have Amazon Prime.
Sweet.
It's 55 minutes long, so blissfully short, as I like to say. And I really did have a great time watching it. I'm not just saying that because those guys are now friends of mine. No, I'm in it in a snapshot in the closing credits. But the way that it's designed, it threw me back to watching like Jackass and like CKY videos. It's very important that they advertise it as a music special and not a concert. It definitely uses footage from the concert that they recorded that I went to, but intersped through it is like animated segments that they did and like little weird skits and like clips of them playing rock, paper, scissors to determine who has to sleep with each other in the hotel room. And like all,
oh, they're that kind of band. Yeah. I didn't realize that they were swingers.
Yeah. So it's like a bunch of like goofy, weird shit, but like, it just feels, I told Chris, it felt like the most wholesome CKY video I've ever watched. Like, like instead of like pushing someone in a shopping cart down a hill, they're forcing Chris to eat his first ever peach. Like, it's just like weird little wholesome shit like that. All right, Brian.
I got nothing, man. I'm sorry.
Son of a bitch.
But it's okay because he was very involved in this episode.
He's a good boy.
I'm taking my job seriously now. And that's true. It's all I have time for is movies. I could talk about Dead Heat. I watched that this week.
All right, fair enough. Oh, you know what? This will come out just in time, so you won't see Brian on it, but you will see a little bit of Scott and I. We're still working out the details at the time that we're recording this, but on December 12th, Geekscape is going to do, similar to what we did for Halloween, a live stream on YouTube and Facebook. So if you are just sitting at home on a Saturday, December 12th, with nothing to do, hop on there. We're going to be raising money for a charity. I still haven't gotten the official thumbs up from the charity yet, which is why I'm not saying it at this time, but it's going to be literally every single show on the Geekscape Network has a different segment that they're doing, and we are going to be hosting a roundtable discussion about holiday horrors. We're still working on the guest list for that, but I know for a fact that Joshua Napier will be one of the people joining us. As far as Brian, he will hopefully be doing a couple little like 15 to 30 second video transitional clips in the way that he edits. So that should all be a very fun time.
Yeah, yeah. I got some stuff coming your way I think you guys will like. So
I'm excited. Now, that was Dead Heat, as released in 1988 and picked by Scott. Now, I think you may be under the impression that we've seen as many 3D horror movies as we could possibly want to talk about. But boy, you'd be wrong, because Brian had us watch another 3D horror movie, and it may be the worst usage of 3D I've ever seen. So
possibly.
Tune in and find out.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.